Many people would consider frugality to be a Christian virtue, but is it really? Hi, I'm Rob West. We often equate frugality with stewardship, but they're not exactly the same thing. Today, we'll explain why. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Now, just so you know what I mean by frugal, I'm talking about being careful with your resources. Someone who's frugal saves their money, spends less than they earn, and is economical in their financial choices. Maybe that's you, or maybe you're married to someone who's a conscientious penny pincher. Being frugal can demonstrate virtues like self-control and patience. And of course, we've all heard Benjamin Franklin's quote, "A penny saved is a penny earned." Here at Faith and Finance, we do recommend saving for the future, paying down your debts, and avoiding overspending. So is there a difference between just being frugal and the financial stewardship we talk about so often? I'd say there is. You see, frugality alone doesn't lead to true peace. From a biblical perspective, we aren't the owners of our money and possessions. God is. As Psalm 24 reminds us, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Recognizing Christ's lordship over our finances shifts the focus from mere numbers to the condition of our hearts. Here's what Jesus said about this in Matthew 6. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So being extra careful with your money may help you lay up treasures on earth, but the eternal rewards Jesus speaks of come from a different approach. They come when you surrender your needs and desires to God, embracing your role as a steward of His blessings. It's all about perspective. Frugality can be a tool for faithful stewardship, or if pursued for its own sake, it can lead to selfishness, greed, and pride. So how can you tell if you've gone from solid stewardship to frugal foolishness? Well, here are some signs. Do you spend hours being frugal every week? Maybe you're into clipping coupons, driving around to get the best gas prices, or searching the internet for deals on necessities. In other words, has frugality become an obsession? Do you go without things you need just to save money? Maybe you're like the person who sleeps on the floor just to avoid spending money on a bed. Another red flag is hoarding, stocking up on items just because they're a good deal, leaving closets overflowing with toothpaste or toilet paper, or holding on to things indefinitely just in case. This mindset can signal a deeper issue, a struggle to fully trust in God's provision. Do you compromise your safety in the name of frugality? Choosing to eat expired foods or use prescriptions past their expiration, all for the sake of saving a few dollars, can actually put you and your family in danger. If you think about frugality as a competition or feel pressured to do it, you may have the wrong attitude. And if spending any money at all stresses you out, that's an indication that you're missing out on God's peace. A final sign that you might be taking frugality too far is if you resent having to give or share anything, even if it's just a potluck supper or a church fundraiser. The fact is, God calls us to be generous. If penny pinching kills your generosity, well, you're missing out on God's blessings. Hebrews 13:16 reminds us, "Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God." As with every kind of behavior, there's always an underlying mindset that triggers our actions. I've found that in most cases, overdoing it on frugality springs from a lack of balance. It's okay to clip coupons, for example, if you just don't spend 10 hours a week doing it. Your time is valuable too. Prioritizing the health and well-being of yourself and your family matters more than squeezing a few extra dollars out of your budget. While there's nothing wrong with spending wisely, money isn't the ultimate goal. Acts of generosity, for example, bring a joy that far surpasses any financial gain. So if you find that your frugality is looking more like foolishness, well, it's time to restore the balance. Jesus has the answer for you. Seek first God's kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things, things you really need, will be added to you. Basically speaking, when you put God first, trusting in His provision, you'll find that true peace isn't found in penny pinching, but in faithful stewardship and reliance on Him. Stewardship goes beyond mere frugality. Its greater purpose is to advance God's kingdom on earth until Christ returns. All right, your calls are next. The number, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
The name of Fanny Crosby is familiar to many. She's the writer of the hymn, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is Mine. Fanny became blind at 5 years old, and on this day in 1835, she arrived at a school for the blind, already a gifted poet with a bright future. Fanny's favorite Bible verse came from 1 John 3, which says, "We know that when Christ appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." You can imagine how that comforted her. Fanny knew that one day she would be able to see again, and her first sight would be the face of her Savior. And that promise applies to you and me and all who are in Christ, and that is our great hope. Grow in your daily walk with Christ through Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
While we rejoice that Roe was overturned, the pro-choicers are very energized. They are winning the arguments and elections. We need to win them back. The people who bring you Wretched Radio have produced a powerful, persuasive, and proactive 13-lesson video series to help.
You don't need a PhD to tell you that human life is more valuable than the life of the ants.
Order Life is Best at shop.wretched.org and listen to Wretched Radio Saturday nights at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
FaithFi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good, to explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values. More information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services LLC.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing from you today. We're taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. This show is really dedicated to helping you live as a faithful steward, recognizing your role in managing God's money. And we know that happens every day in a variety of forms. And you have questions about your spending plan or your giving, perhaps you're investing or saving. Maybe it's trying to dump debt and you're just frustrated. You haven't been able to do that more quickly. Well, if we can help you, we'd be delighted to. You can call right now. We've got lines open. Sandy Dickinson ready to take your calls today, and we'll get you on the air quickly. That number, 800-525-7000. Again, it's 800-525-7000. We would look forward to hearing from you right now with lines open. They won't be open long, but now you can get right through. Again, 800-525-7000. Also coming up at the end of the broadcast today, Jerry Boyer stops by. We'll also have Walker Wildman with us. We'll get the latest read on the economy. Some payroll data out today. What did the data say? Well, Jerry will share that with us. Also, Treasury Secretary Bessent speaking about the economy, and we'll get Jerry's take on that. We'll also get an update on what's happening through AFA Action in the area of corporate engagement. All of that straight ahead in our final segment today. In the news today, every cloud might really have a silver lining. Well, at least the looming cloud of higher prices due to tariffs seems to have a bit of an upside. Fear and uncertainty over tariffs is credited with pushing down mortgage rates this past week. The average 30-year fixed rate fell to 6.73%. That's the lowest since December. Now, mortgage rates tend to move in line with the 10-year Treasury yield, which fell to 4.2%. Now, all of that sparked a huge jump in mortgage applications, which were up a full 12% from just the prior week. Refi loan applications soared a whopping 37%, indicating that a lot of folks have been sitting on the sidelines waiting for rates to come down, even a tick. They may have resigned themselves to the idea that rates aren't going back to 2.5% or 3% anytime soon, and they're simply tired of waiting to buy or refinance. Now, if you're thinking about applying for a mortgage, make sure you factor in the full cost of the loan, including not just the monthly payments, but also the closing costs, the insurance, the property taxes, the HOA fees, if any, and the like. Give yourself some margin in your budget for all of your housing expenses, and make sure you don't borrow up to the limit set by the lender. That will often result in a monthly payment that strains your budget. What is that guideline, if you will? Well, 25 to 30% at the most of your take-home pay is really that number that I would be most comfortable with in you allocating to that principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payment. You're going to need more. You're going to need money beyond that for housing maintenance and utilities. But at least for the PITI, if you can target that 25% of take-home pay for your rent or your mortgage payment, that would be ideal. It'll ensure that you have plenty left over for everything else. What about that down payment? Well, that's really the 20% target that we set for you for two reasons. One is that's going to allow you to enter with some equity on the front end. That's a good thing. If we were to see housing prices take a dip, we're not expecting that, but if we did, houses are not immune from ever going down, that's for sure. At least you'd have some equity in there. You'd never be in an upside-down position. Second reason is going to keep that mortgage payment as low as possible by you saving up and putting more down. Thirdly, it's going to ensure that you don't pay that PMI, the private mortgage insurance, which can run you 1% of the mortgage balance. Doesn't do anything for you. It's purely for the lender. And so we'd love for you to be able to take advantage of that fully. All right, let's dive into your questions today. We've got lines open. We're ready for you. That number to call again, 800-525-7000. Again, that's 800-525-7000. You can call right now. All right, we're going to begin today in Oklahoma. Hi, Paul. Go right ahead.
Yes, last week I heard a lady call in, and she had an income question about her Social Security and when she had to pay taxes. And I think it was $37,000, which was over the limit, $34,000, I think. And so I wondered if she had done a charitable contribution to her church for her tithing, would that be able to reduce it where she would not have had to pay taxes?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so basically, what we're talking about here is the thresholds for when you pay taxes on Social Security benefits. And so you're wondering, do contributions, you know, are you talking about for somebody who gets above the standard deduction and how that affects it, or something else?
Yes. Yes. I think she was at 37, and I believe the number was 34. And I thought, well, you know, we didn't address her giving to her local church a tithe. And if she had tithed on that 37, it would have put her under 34, and then she wouldn't have had to pay taxes at all.
Yeah.
And she could have just done that directly from that.
I see.
It was off of her.
Yeah, it's a good question. And unfortunately, the answer is no. So deductions are not factored into adjusted gross income when determining whether your Social Security benefits are taxable. So the IRS uses something called provisional income, which is calculated before deductions. And that would be either the standard deduction or the itemized deduction. Neither of those is factored into the provisional income number. So it's your AGI before deductions and then any non-taxable interest. So that would be like if you had a municipal bond, and then 50% of your Social Security benefits. You put all that together, that equals provisional income, and then that's the number that's used to determine whether or not, you know, any of your Social Security is taxable, or whether 50% is taxable, or up to 85% is taxable if you go over those provisional income thresholds.
Well, I was what I was thinking was it was the charitable contribution directly from her retirement to her church. And so that would have, because there's that so much she had to take out. And so if she did directly to the church from the IRA, it would not show up as an income on her at the end of the year.
Okay. Yeah, but it does not reduce your provisional income for determining whether Social Security is taxable, even a qualified charitable deduction. Because, you know, it, I believe, provisional income would not lower that, it would not be lowered by the QCD. It's a good question though. You could certainly check with the CPA to confirm that, but my understanding is based on the definition of provisional income, even the QCD would not affect it.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. I appreciate you calling, Paul. It's a great question. We don't want to pay any more taxes than we should. So any opportunity we have to lower that, I'm all in favor of, as long as it's legal, that's for sure. All right. Let's go to Louisiana. Hi, Karen. Go right ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Yes, I'm calling. I don't know if my question qualifies or not, but I am 65 and I'm in my initial enrollment period with Medicare. And I already have signed up for Part A, and I have Part D as well. And so my situation is I have insurance through my postal retirement, but I don't know whether I should opt for Part B or not. So that's my question. Would it be advisable for me to get Medicare Part B?
Got it. Yeah, it's a good question. Let's do this. I'm up against a break here, so I'm going to go ahead and take that break, Karen. When we come back, we'll dive into your question about Medicare Part B based on your situation. Stay right there. Gene coming your way as well. Lines are open, 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance. Stick around.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
When you see trash in the media, submit it to 1millionmoms.com. Over the years, 1 million moms and our partners have improved advertising choices of programmers and content seen on TV. Just like you, 1 million moms want to protect little eyes and ears from the trash that could hurt them. So when you see trash in the media, visit 1millionmoms.com. Scroll down and look for the Submit Trash button.
Take it away!
1millionmoms.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how.
Bernie and Alice Larson are faithful supporters of the American Family Association.
We felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
You can learn more about charitable annuities and other financial products at AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Looks like all the lines are filling up. We've got some great questions coming up, so let's dive right back in. Before the break, we were talking to Karen in Louisiana. She's covered under the Postal Service health benefits. She's earning a Postal Service retirement, and there's been some changes. She's wondering how to think about Medicare Part B. She's already got Part A and Part D, and this is new, Karen, so you're going to want to double check this, but I'll just share with you my understanding of how this works with the new public postal service health benefits that went into effect Jan 1 of this year. When did you retire? Did you retire before January 1st of this year?
Oh, yeah. I retired in 2009.
Okay. So if you weren't already enrolled in Medicare Part B, my understanding is if you retired before Jan 1, you're not required to enroll in it to keep your Postal Service health benefits. But if you were age 64 or older on Jan 1 and later retired, then you're exempt from it as well. For those folks who retire after January 1st and were younger than 64 on that date, then they're going to be required to enroll in Medicare Part B, is the way I'm reading it. So it sounds like in that situation, you would not necessarily be required. It doesn't pay for Medicare Part B, the premium, directly. And so there is a cost to that. So I think, you know, there's just a lot of nuances of this. And so I think it would be helpful for you to go ahead and reach out to, you know, Medicare and talk this through with them. But it's just based on what I'm seeing, because you'd retired prior to Jan 1, it would not be required if you didn't already have it.
Yes, that is correct. But yeah, and that's where my dilemma is right now. Should I go ahead and get it?
Yeah.
Because they are requiring it for any new retirees. So I don't know if my insurance company will say, oh, well, you should have gotten B, and they just don't treat me right.
No, it makes sense. And it'd be worth looking into. I mean, so here would be the pro of having it. It's, you know, you have A, which is the hospital insurance, and then D, which is the prescription drugs. B is going to cover that outpatient care. So doctor visits and labs and preventative services, and then durable medical equipment if you needed them. And so that's going to give you better coverage than just that Postal Service health benefit alone. And when you combine the two, then the Medicare Part B becomes the primary, and then the Postal Service health benefit kind of wraps around it, which could potentially reduce your co-pays down to zero and, you know, ensure that you get the best care. The downside is just the premium. You know, it's going to be at least $185 a month, could be higher if you have income triggers, and that's an extra cost. So if you're healthy and rarely need the outpatient care, then you may be happy with just the Postal Service health benefit alone. If you don't need it now and later decide to enroll in it, assuming you're exempt from retirement, then you'd face, you know, a late enrollment penalty. So I think, you know, you just need to think about whether or not you want it. And, you know, if you anticipate frequent doctor visits or you just want to know that you have the best care possible, it might be worth you going ahead and picking it up.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking, that well, right now I'm healthy, you know, but who knows what's going to happen down in the future. So Yes. Well, I think, and I know I'll have that late enrollment penalty if I just wait a year, 10% per year. So I'm just kind of in the middle of, should I go ahead and jump on it now before the 31st of March, or just wait and see?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, if you just want that to know that you have that better care, potentially, you know, lower copays, especially if you think now or in the future, you're going to need more frequent care or doctor visits. And a lot of that has to do with family history and your current health status. I think that's really the decision to make at this point. Thanks for being on the program today. Call anytime. Let's go to North Carolina. Hi, Gene. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. Thank you. Yes, my wife and I are in our 80s, and we live off of my military retirement and Social Security. We get along fine, but we don't have a lot of discretionary, and I have some properties that my kids don't express any interest in that we were going to build on at one time. And I was thinking about the charitable trust, if you think that would be a good idea for me. This is a piece of land it's not on the water, but it's the next property over the Intercoastal Waterway in North Carolina, and I'd say it's at least 200 plus value on that. And I was wondering how would be a good way to handle that.
Yeah.
To give us a little, you know, a little extra income so we could visit my wife's family in Italy and things like that.
Yeah, very good. So it is income generating currently, is that right?
No, it is not. It's just a piece of land that's sitting there and we're paying taxes on.
Okay. And so what would be your plan to generate more income out of it?
Well, I don't know whether to do that as a trust for a charity, or if there's anything that can be done with it to generate the income.
Got it. Yeah, it's just raw land. Yeah, I mean, you certainly could look at something called a charitable remainder trust, where you'd get income from the property for a period, your lifetime or a set number of years, and then the remainder goes to charity. So the benefit now is you get the income now and the tax break, and then you know, the charity benefits later at your death. What is it that you're trying to solve for in terms of monthly income that you'd like to be able to receive?
Oh, I don't have a particular amount in mind. You know, anything would be good. I just like to quit paying the taxes on it and give it to someone that can get some use out of it. We've had it for sale, and it's just such a, you know, I don't have time to mess around with all the, you know, what you have to go through to try to sell something anymore.
Yeah.
And my family, I have five kids, and they're all doing well. They don't seem interested in the property. So I need to do something with it, you know, before we decide to visit the Lord.
Yes, very good. Yeah, I mean, so it's possible. I think you would just need to talk to, do you have the ministry in mind already as to where you'd like this to go?
Yes, I'd like to go right here to AFR.
Yeah, excellent. So let's do this. I think the team would love to chat with you about it. Stay on the line. We'll talk a bit more about that off the air. We'll be right back.
Empty stomachs, waterborne illnesses, hopelessness. These are harsh realities for impoverished African children, but you can make a difference. Join with Cross International to share the love of Jesus with a child in critical need today. Each gift of $62 provides a child with life-saving resources. Give now at crossinternational.org/faith or 866-843-9500 and help kids go from barely surviving to thriving.
We don't have to be like the 10 that said it can't be done, it's too big, the giants are too big. We need to be like Joshua and Caleb and say, you know what, there are giants. This is a massive problem. When you have a nation that is ignorant of the principles that produce a free society, start where you can. It's the only way I know. It's a little bit at a time.
Join Walker Wildman and Rick Green as they tackle today's issues from a biblical and a constitutional perspective. At the Core, 1 p.m. Central weekdays on AFR.
Healthcare is complicated. It doesn't have to be. If you don't love how your health insurance works, maybe it's time to leave traditional health insurance behind. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers you flexibility. Enroll anytime. Choose your own provider and select the program that fits your needs and budget. CHM is the original faith-based way of taking care of your medical bill costs. Learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit faithfi.com and click Find a CKA.
AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today. We've got room for maybe one or two more, 800-525-7000. Also coming up in the next segment, Jerry Boyer stops by with Walker Wildman. We're getting an update on the markets, the economy, and the latest in corporate engagement through the incredible work of AFA Action here at the American Family Association. Let's go right back to the phones, though, to North Carolina. Hi, Alex. How can I help?
Good morning, Rob. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Rob, I was listening to your program, and I just have a question that is, I had to take a decision pretty quick. My wife, she had a open heart surgery back at the end of 23, and unfortunately, everything went okay. She is fine now, but she's unable to work as the quadruple bypass that she had, so it's almost impossible for her to keep on some activities continually. My question is this. She's got now disability, federal disability from the Postal Service, and she's getting Social Security also. But I want to keep on building some retirement for her, like a Roth IRA. I understand that I can open one for her as I am a spouse, working spouse for her. But I don't know if that would affect the benefits that she's getting right now.
Mm,
yeah. Do you know anything about it?
I do. Yeah, it's a good question. And you're on to the right track here. So that would be exactly the way that you'd do it, because she can have an IRA, even if she's disabled and not working. But the spousal IRA would be the way to go. That's, again, as you point out, for a non-working spouse. And then you could contribute to that IRA, either Roth or traditional, based on your income as the working spouse, so long as your earned income covers the contribution limits for both, then she could put in the full amount in her Roth IRA. And then the IRA assets do not affect SSDI, because it's based on work history, not financial resources, and you can have any amount in an IRA without affecting those benefits. So I think that would be the way to go.
Okay, one more question. The limit, I understand for me, I'm 53, so my limit is $8,000 a year. But if I open one for her, will that be split, or is another amount the limit for her personal IRA? Well, actually, IRA, that states is individual. Do you know if that's $8,000 for both, or it's a different amount?
Yeah, no, she can do the higher catch-up limit in the spousal IRA if she's 50 or older. So if she's over the age of 50, then she would be able to do the $8,000 in the spousal IRA.
Okay, well, that sounds great. And if I open one IRA for her now, can I still fund it 2024, or it's just for 2025?
No, you can do 2024 so long as you haven't filed your 2024 tax return yet.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay.
Your program, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your call today. May the Lord bless you as well, sir. Let's go to Tom in Georgia. Tom, how can I help?
Hey, good morning, Rob. I'm 65, talking with the guys about, you know, retiring maybe in a couple of years. And they said, why don't you take your, you know, your Social Security now versus when I'm 67? I don't really need to use it right now, but they said, you know, take it now and invest it versus waiting. But I would get a little bit more. And then I thought, well, what if I wait till I'm 70 and get a whole bunch more? Is the possibility of the investment, is that a greater chance of even making more money by holding off, or what do you think? What's a good option there?
Yeah, you know, it really comes down to, it's a great question, Tom. It really comes down to several factors. So longevity, your financial needs, your other income sources, and perhaps even tax considerations. So the bottom line is, at full retirement age, you obviously get 100% of what they call your primary insurance amount, which you can find at mysSA.gov. If you were to wait fully until age 70, your benefit would increase by 8% a year, essentially. So you could get, depending on what your full retirement age is, somewhere between 24 and 32% more than full retirement age. So if your benefit was $2,500 a month at age 70, it could be, you know, $3,100, $3,200 a month. Now, what would be the break even? Well, you would need to live past that point, which is typically somewhere between 80 and 82, in order to be paid back for everything that you gave up. And then you'd have that higher check for the rest of your life. If you passed away earlier, which obviously only the Lord knows that, but, you know, then we would look in hindsight and say, well, claiming at full retirement age may have been better. But I think, you know, if you have a family history living beyond that, you're in, you know, good financial health right now. I would say, you know, the likelihood that you're going to live beyond 82 is pretty good. And therefore, you know, it's this idea that you're going to get this guaranteed 8% return per year, which you're certainly not going to get in the market, guaranteed. And then, you know, so long as you live long enough to be able to be repaid for what you didn't receive, then, you know, you might really be glad in your 90s that you've got this higher check that you could use for long-term care or other purposes. Does that make sense?
One follow-up. Let's say I start taking Social Security, but I don't use it and I invest it. Good option right now at my age, 65. Some good things to consider. You know, obviously not long term, but short term, a good idea. Where do I put all that money in? What's, you know, you said the market's not looking great. So, you know, IRA, Roth, I don't know, mutual funds. I don't really know what I could get back that might make sense.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you were to take Social Security at full retirement age and start investing those monthly benefits instead of spending them, you know, then your break even age compared to waiting until age 70 will change depending on your investment returns. So normally without investing, the break even is, you know, 80 to 82. However, if you invest those and earn a reasonable return, you know, it can shift to later, you know, for sure. And so I think the question is just, what would you do with it? You know, I think at that point, depends on whether you have earned income or not, as to whether you could put it into a Roth IRA. If you, you know, put it in a taxable account, then obviously the taxes are going to have a drag on the return. I would probably take that and just start systematically investing it into a, you know, a balanced mutual fund that's balanced between stocks and bonds. You could decide to take a little bit more risk. I mean, just to give you a sense of how that would impact it, if you were to take that money every month at full retirement age and you would get just a 6% return on the money, that would shift your break even from 80 to 82 up to, you know, 85 to 87. If you got an 8% return during those years, that could push it all the way out to age 90. And so that is a factor for somebody who doesn't need the money and could invest it. Does that make sense?
It does, really. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for calling, Tom. It was a great question, and hopefully that gives you a few things to think about. Well, folks, we're going to take our final break. I know we have some lines holding. We're looking forward to having Jerry and Walker with us in the next segment as well. We'll get the skinny on the markets, the job data that's just out, and what's happening in corporate engagement. AFA's been really busy in that area. We'll be right back.
The Middle East, that's one part of the world we need to pay attention to, especially the country of Israel. Each week, I'll help you make sense of what's happening in that region through a biblical lens. I'll bring you important information about security threats, archaeological discoveries, biblical prophecy, ministries happening on the ground, and much more. I'm John Riley. Join me for the Middle East Report Special Edition every Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio as I connect you to the people, places, and geography of what we read in God's Word.
Most books about the end times focus on the events described in biblical prophecy. But what about the one who is revealed in those events? This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress shares how prophecy reveals the person of Jesus Christ as Messiah, prophet, and coming king. Join us for the brand new series, Jesus Revealed in the End Times, this week on Pathway to Victory.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. In this segment, Jerry Boyer joins us here in just a second. We'll get an update on the markets and the economy. We'll also check in on the latest activity in the area of corporate engagement. Walker Wildman normally joins us in this segment today, and fortunately, he was pulled away to something else, so Jerry will cover for him. And Jerry, I'm sure you're up to the task of covering for Walker Wildman, huh?
Well, in this narrow area, yes. I don't think I can handle his whole bandwidth, but I think maybe this part where I specialize.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, give us just the latest. Obviously, what's front and center today is the jobs data, I guess, huh?
Yeah, so the jobs data, I mean, it made a big headline in the Wall Street Journal, but it was 150,000 jobs created, 170 were expected. The unemployment rate went from 4 to 4.1. So there's not much there, right? I mean, the news tries to make news out of everything, but makes it just slightly more likely the Fed will cut because, you know, that upside down world of Keynesian economics, which is, oh, if the economy's sputtering a little, we'll need stimulus. So let's all get excited about the stimulus rather than about what's going on with the economy. It's sort of like, you know, let's say that you have a bad injury and you're in the hospital, and you would think the most important thing that makes you feel good is, hey, is my injury healing? But it's more like, oh, your injury is not healed, so we're going to give you more morphine. Oh, wonderful. My leg's still broken. I'm going to get more morphine. That's kind of how the economy works when it's addicted to easy money. But this was not a big move. I mean, the really big moves, frankly, have all been about the trade war stuff. So the big trade after Trump was elected and when it was expected that he would be elected was a growth trade. growth areas went up, and, you know, recession hedges went down. Then he started the trade war, and since then, markets have pretty much moved on a day-to-day basis, depending on, you know, where we think the trade war, whether we think we're going to have a trade war or not. So I think I mentioned to you that, you know, the biggest investor in the world is the Fed, and they have a dual mandate. They conflict with one another. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I wouldn't say that Trump is double-minded. I think he's committed to these trade wars, or maybe they're a negotiating tactic and he doesn't want trade wars. It's not really clear. So whether he's clear in his heart and his mind or not, we all out here in the rest of the world who are in business are not clear on what he's doing. Is it all just a way to get them to drop their tariffs so that we're trading with everybody more? Or is it really we want to fundamentally restructure the global economy in a way that cuts down on the amount of international trade? And as he announces a trade on you know, Mexico or Canada or China, and then exceptions for those who aren't trading with China, and then he'll suspend it for a week or so with Mexico. Well, maybe we'll give him a little more time. That on again, off again stuff, frankly, is chaotic. I don't mind if Elon is in there creating a little chaos in the bureaucracy, but I'm looking for a little less chaos for people who are in the markets trying to figure out what's real and what isn't, and are we really trying – do we want a trade war, or is a trade war a threat that's used to get people to the negotiating table? And markets have generally been down. They've given back all their gains since the Trump election. So that's what the story's been about in the economy, and I'm sad to say that because I think Trump could do marvelous things. I love the idea of a golden age. A golden age would be lower taxes. Let's do the lower taxes part first, and then we can talk about maybe increasing taxes on trade. Instead, we're starting with the trade with the tax hikes, not the tax cuts, and that's creating problems for markets.
Yeah. Treasury Secretary Bessent was on CNBC this morning. I saw the interview. I know he's speaking today as well, or I guess yesterday it was the Economic Club of New York. And he was talking about, Jerry, just that, yes, we could begin to see this economy that starting to roll over a bit. But his main talking point is what he calls this natural adjustment as we move away from public spending to private spending. And that the market and the economy have become hooked, and we've talked about this at length, that the market and the economy become addicted to government spending, and there needs to be a detox period. But this is a move that we need to make for the ultimate good of the economy.
I agree with that. So if we're talking about the Doge-related layoffs, I'm all for that. We're addicted to government spending. We're also addicted to government printing. I think we need to get off of both of those drugs, and we need to do that as soon as possible. I think the way to do that is to cut business taxes so that it increases profitability and growth. That makes those things can be really big problems for us, or they can be speed bumps. So if we've got low tax rates, if we're the lowest tax rates in the world, which means business is flowing in here, then we have a higher growth rate, then those speed bumps are easier to deal with. But if the Fed's going to not stimulate, and if we don't have the government spending, and we also have business planning increasingly difficult because we don't know what the rules are going to be, how much are we going to be manufacturing here versus how much abroad, then I think that makes it harder to deal with those other things. By the way, this job report showed us that actually Doge is not having that big an effect. I mean, they've laid off, there's like, you know, jobs are just, job growth is just a little bit less than expected. So all this idea that Doge is going to create chaos because we're going to have mass unemployment, I'm sorry, they're not laying off people at that level. They're laying off people in the tens of thousands who work in Washington, D.C. Now, people were actually doing something useful, like Veterans Affairs. Well, maybe not so many layoffs there, but people were basically making business harder. The people who we pay to tell us not to do things, you know, the people, the regulators, laying them off is definitely a net plus for the economy.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to Treasury Secretary Bessent, he makes the case, though, Jerry, specifically related to the tariffs, that there's this, what he calls, one-time price adjustment. And he pushes back against this idea that tariffs would fuel continued inflation. He also talks about the fact that, a good economy doesn't necessarily mean lower prices, that these higher prices are okay so long as we're bringing more jobs back, we've got wage increases, we've got a robust and growing economy. And, they're not getting necessarily the credit for falling oil prices, which I guess are down 15% here in this, first 6 weeks of the year, and mortgage rates falling, although I guess you could say that is more directly tied to a slowing economy. It could go both ways. But your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would argue. I mean, the president mentioned it as kind of quasi-State of the Union speech that interest rates are coming down, so that's a good thing. Well, interest rates are coming down because people are going into safer vehicles. Treasuries are a recession hedge. So if people are selling stocks and buying bonds, that's not a good sign for the future. And makes it sound like I'm negative about this administration. I'm not. I'm very positive about this administration. Yeah. But this is a problem. And what one-time price adjustment? I mean, that's what Nixon said in the 1970s, and we had a decade of inflation. And by the way, it's a one-time price adjustment upwards. So it's one time upwards, and then it stays up. I mean, can we really afford that? When I go shopping with my wife, we look at the prices of things. So it's like, oh, well, you need to take another sacrifice. They need to go up again. But eventually that'll be okay because we'll be onshoring jobs. So, I mean, do they know how long it takes to build a factory? Right? That's not something that happens in 6 months. That's 5-6 years. So we're going to all pay higher prices for the next several years. But there'll be more factories 5 or 6 years from now, maybe, because who's president then? So I'm sorry. This idea about we need to make sacrifices, I don't think that that's really right. I think that a good economic policy would bring down prices now. And that's when Trump got elected, all the inflation hedge indicators indicated prices are going to start falling until he started the trade war. So markets are saying, whatever the Treasury Secretary is saying, whatever I'm saying, it doesn't matter. The most amount of knowledge we have about the economy is out there with everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not smart enough to know what the markets know, and neither is Treasury Secretary Bessent, and neither is President Trump. That's billions of people. That's hundreds of millions of Americans making trades, trying to decide what's happening in the future. And since they started the trade war, the inflation trade has been back on. Maybe they're all wrong. And Bessent is right, or maybe the president has a philosophical commitment to trade wars that helped him win an election, and he's going to go do it, even if it's going to cause inflation.
Yeah.
So I do not buy the Treasury Secretary's argument on that point. I do on oil. Oil prices coming down. I mean, partly that's a growth thing. Okay, we might be heading into a global recession. But I also think it's clear that the Trump administration is going to be very pro oil and gas, which is terrific for us, for the world. So that's great to see oil prices coming down. So a lot of good things are happening and some bad things are happening. But since what I do is come to you every week and say, why are markets acting the way they are?
Yeah.
Simple. Markets are down because of the trade war.
Jerry, one more question on the tariffs and we'll move on to corporate engagement. Specifically related to what's coming, I guess they've signaled April 2nd is the day that the reciprocal tariffs go in place. And, different from just a one-off, what it might escalate into a trade war. What about this idea that, we've got massive trade imbalance, deficits here, surpluses with other countries, and there needs to be this reciprocal approach and a reset of sorts to get everything back in line?
Yeah, the idea is we need to cut the trade deficit. Here's the problem. When President Trump did his last trade war, our trade deficit with China ballooned afterwards. Why? Because we tariff them, but then they tariff us, right? So they're not inert. They don't just put up with it. We tariff their toy manufacturers and iPhone manufacturers, and they tariff our farmers. So what did we do? We chose American manufacturing workers over American farmers. I just don't think we should be in the business of doing that. I think if you want to have more manufacturing in the United States, American workers do not need the subsidy of tariffs. They just need government off their neck.
Mm.
We didn't have tariffs. I'm in Pittsburgh. Steel industry took over the world here without tariffs. We did it just by making better steel more cheaply than anybody else in the world. We don't need to cheat. We just need our own government not fighting against us.
That's well said. I let the time get away from us. Next week, we're going to start with corporate engagement. Jerry, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. That's Jerry Boyer. Hey, big thanks to my team today, Sandy, Devin, Jim, everybody here at FaithFi. If you want to check us out, just go to faithfi.com. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.